Season 4, Episode 3 with Eleanor Wroblewsky, Learner Profiles 8. Hello everyone, it's time for another Actual Fluency podcast, and I'm just home from the Polyglot Gathering in Berlin. It was last week. I'm on the back of a cold here, which is a little bit annoying, but when you've had so much fun for 5-6 days, then I guess coming home with a cold is quite okay on balance, and it's to be expected. I usually get a cold when I mingle with a lot of people from all over the world, and I had such a great time, and I want to thank everyone for making it such a good event, especially the organizers. Great job on that. I can't believe they've run it so well. Huge shout out to Yuda, Chuck, and Martin, of course, who are really pulling in all the weight on that, and all the other organizers and volunteers as well, without whom it wouldn't be possible. So thank you guys. And also thank you to the people who came up to me and said that they were listening to the show and they really like what I'm doing and want me to keep going, because it really boosts my mojo, so to say, that I put a face on some of the listeners out there, and that you guys appreciate it. I really appreciate twice as much, you know. It really means a lot to me. And as long as there are people who want to listen to the Actual Fluency Podcast, can't even say my own podcast name anymore, then I'll keep doing it. So don't worry about it. And I had a great time in Berlin as well. Used some of my Hungarian, my feeble Hungarian, which was exciting. There was an American whose name I forgot. He spoke really great Hungarian, and then there were a few native speakers and one or two other learners, and we sat in a circle, and I got to use some of my very basic Hungarian, and I understood a lot of what the others were saying too, which was exciting. My Russian is a little bit steady and stagnant at the level just above useless. I can say a few things, and I do understand a few things, but my vocabulary is so limited that I'm really struggling to understand, especially verbs, long verbs. I'm really not too sure on. So I know, at least I know what to work on. Today I've got a great episode for you. It's a learner profiles again, and I wanted to just comment quickly on the learner profiles episodes. Yes, half of the reason that they're called learner profiles is that I'm not sure what to call them. So in a sense, it is a bit of a cop-out. But on the other hand, they just contain so many random topics. As you would, it would be like, can you imagine talking to your best friend for an hour and then putting a topic to the conversation? Sometimes you can do it, and I have done it in the past. But other times it's just like, well, general language learning. Yeah, well, that's not a title. So that's why I call it learner profiles. It's not because I don't want to put a title on it or because I don't know it. It's just simply because we're talking about so many random things, so many different things about language learning that, yeah, I could just call it language learning, but then every single episode would be called that, or most of them anyway. So thank you for being a listener, as always. I really appreciate it. And one last thing, if you want to come on the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. Go to actualfluency.com/guest and fill out a short application, and hopefully I'll get to talk to you. So enjoy this episode with Eleanor, and I'll see you in the next one. All right, we're back with another episode of the Actual Fluency podcast, and today I'm happy to welcome Eleanor onto the podcast. And Eleanor has been keeping me in check on Twitter, and she's also in school learning languages and is working to be a comedian on something we'll hear about in just a minute. But before that, all that, why don't you give the listeners a little story on how you got into language learning, on where you are today, and yeah, what made you come on the podcast?
Yeah, I guess my journey in language learning probably started, like a lot of people, in middle school. We had to learn a language, and I learned Spanish. And I had a lot of, I think, really good Spanish teachers in middle school and high school. So I kind of did graduate high school, and I think a lot of my classmates did too, with a decent ability to, you know, read and speak and so forth. I also studied Latin in high school. I have forgotten all of my Latin, basically. I know a song about how to decline nouns. That's all the Latin I have left.
Wow,
You
it's impressive.
memorize something when you're 14, I think you never forget it. I think
Right.
that's science. But I also I kind of tried to learn some languages independently at that time. I think the resources maybe weren't quite there in the same way for online in, 2002, 2003. So I would go to the library and I would get the Pinsler, and then I would learn how to say where is Red Square in Russian, and I'd forget all the rest of it. And then, so I kind of was trying to flirt with that a little bit. I did also, I studied some Italian in college, and although I think a lot of people have this problem with being good at both Italian and Spanish at the same time, is
Right.
they really interfere with each other, because they're so similar. So then that aids in comprehension and everything. But for example, after I later on in college, after I wasn't studying languages, I was studying art. I went to Italy for a semester, and I did just one of those English language programs, and maybe didn't socialize with locals as much as I could have, but I did have to shop in Italian and so forth. And I feel like while I was there, I forgot all of my old Spanish kind of, and I really had to work to get it back. And the point that I was trying to get to is that I like in Italian, you use the definite article literally all the time. You just use it anytime you have a noun. And I still overuse definite articles in Spanish to this day, I think. Just all those kind of things. So anyway, then I sort of actually I really appreciate how much you talk about depression and things like that in the podcast. And I recently listened to the depression episode, and I thought that was really kind of relatable to my maybe experience too. So that was really nice that I kind of was in this really I don't know. I had dropped out of school for a while, and I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And then I kind of found the polyglot community online, and I wasn't really like I was I started trying to remember my Spanish mostly because I was working in customer service at the time, and I would get a decent amount of customers in that would be Spanish speakers, and they would, be trying to have their child interpret for them.
Right.
And it was just very refreshing to them. Even my Spanish was kind of not super great, but I could mostly understand what they were saying to me. And then I looked up how to say things like a yard is about 93 centimeters. And we don't sell in meters, we sell in yards and inches, important things. I
Yes.
was working in a fabric store at the
Of
time.
course, yeah.
So people would come in and be like, can I get a meter of fabric? And I would say, okay, 1 meter is about 1 1/8 yards. I'd say in Spanish, even if I couldn't do all of the requests in Spanish,
That's hilarious.
anyway, and then I kind of found the polyglot community kind of through those weird ways that you find things in the internet. You
Yeah.
see one thing and all of a sudden you follow 10 links and you're subscribed to a podcast
Right, the
and
domino
quite remember
effect.
how you got there. So then I actually thought that this podcast I found pretty early, and I thought it was really inspiring at the time. This was a little over a year ago, I guess. Yeah, a year, maybe a year and a
Cool.
couple months. So then I decided around the time I decided to go back to school, and I did decide to do a Spanish major, which is it's basically like a linguistics and literature major for the most part. So we do there are still some language practice classes that I've taken in Spanish. But it's mostly that I do a lot of reading, most of my reading, all of my writing, and all of the class discussion is in Spanish.
Oh, that's really
So it's
good.
basically all my, you know, so that's really kind of helpful to me. Although currently this semester I'm taking a advanced Spanish conversation class. And I think the professor that I have has this goal that she'll turn us into independent language learners. And I think it's really backfiring, actually. I think a lot of people have dropped the class. She's like, you have to make goals. And I personally don't like goals, because if I go and look at the goal that I haven't completed, then I feel like, what have I done? I'm a failure. And I don't do more, as opposed to kind of, if you have a habit that maybe you don't keep track of super well, then you can like, oh, I haven't been studying enough, I'll go back to studying every day. But then it's also like, when I'm in school, I feel like for Spanish, it's not, I don't do super extra stuff, but then it's like, oh, I'll take this class because my Spanish is all, you know, I can talk about literature and like cultural differences all day. I know a lot of words for like viceroys and like, you know, I can't think of a word for like a toothbrush off the top of my head, things like that. Like, oh, I'll take conversation class, but I don't know. I don't know how successful that approach is as compared to some of the other professors that teach the same class where you just, you know, like we're watching a Spanish TV show, which is very good for helping with like conversational stuff. But then at the same time, so like put on the vocabulary quiz all the colloquial expressions, and it's like, I can't appropriately use this.
Right.
I can maybe swear like a Spaniard after watching so much of this TV show, because they swear all the time.
Right.
In Spain, but I also can't swear like a Spaniard in Mexico, because Mexicans don't swear very often.
Right. It's a different language.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting.
Well, that's an interesting dynamic with those two different classes there. We can talk about that a little bit, because it's something that I'm quite interested in. Basically, how can we improve the language learning in schools is one of my little, I guess, save the world kind of projects. But I was thinking more like, I mean, you obviously enjoy your class, and I also did some German in uni, and it was very, we did a lot of grammar, and we didn't do as much literature. And then I did English, where we did a lot of literature and hardly any grammar. So how's the mix for you in your Spanish class?
It's mostly pretty good. Like, actually this semester I have four different classes in Spanish.
Wow.
So it's because I had been in school for a long time and then I dropped out. So then the only classes that I have left to take are the ones for whatever major I had chosen, basically. Anyway, so like there's one of my classes is actually, I think, a really interesting and really good mix, because it's a linguistics class. So we're learning a lot about phonetics and phonology, but we also do incorporated with that practical pronunciation exercises.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And part of the grade is our pronunciation improvement. And I think for advanced level, improvement is a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a difference. I'm not sure the best way to do language education in schools is to make every student into a super motivated, independent language learner, though. Like, I think there's a lot of like pedagogical techniques out there that can be kind of applied to be like, I'm the teacher and I'm giving you this
right
in class time, and that's what you're here for. And then, you know, like, I am actually interested in going abroad to teach English after I graduate. And so I kind of think about this stuff a lot. I'm doing like conversational English tutoring right now, and that's, you know, basically just going and hanging out. But then part of the dynamic of the friendship is maybe this person is very comfortable asking me questions about English, and I correct them a little more than my other friends that are not native English speakers.
Right.
So that's, but then that's kind of advanced level stuff. I'm also taking Korean in school, kind of just because I'm already here and I'm paying tuition, and
Might
I
as
want
well,
to learn
right?
Korean, you know? So, and I started learning Korean on my own and it didn't really like hook into me that much. And I think actually for our Korean class, I think the most helpful thing that the professor has done, other than, I mean, you know, choose decent textbook and whatever, we have to like practice talking in class and so forth, but we have to have a conversation partner.
Right.
And I am kind of like, I knew that was helpful, but I didn't really know, like, I was kind of terrified to do it, so I never did. Just go and have conversation partners myself previously. And I think that's probably like the most helpful thing is that you know, you go to class and you learn grammar, but then you also go and you like talk to your friends and maybe you don't take any notes or memorize anything. Or
Right.
when I was like more of a beginner, I took more notes and memorized a few more things from conversation, but now I barely do it. Like if we get to talking about something really complicated, like the differences in housing between the US and South Korea,
Right.
right? We might get out a notebook and like draw some pictures and write some explanatory notes, but like it's I think it that's kind of the most helpful thing.
Right. It's still
And it's
pretty
also
nice, I would say, for such a, I mean, Korean is such a difficult, different
yeah.
language that, I mean, to be able to do that after a year, and even though you need some drawings to help you sometimes, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, and some of the like one of my partners that I meet with, we kind of do more of a language exchange. And then she's actually here because her husband is doing his postdoc. So, and then
Okay.
another language exchange I have is that just with someone that's, you know, going to school in English and has a lot of American friends and has been here for a long time. So then we basically never speak English.
Right.
Yeah, Korean is kind of maybe a more easy one to do that with too here, being in an American research university, because there are more Koreans than people learning Korean on campus.
Okay, yeah, that's
I know,
cool.
yeah, like there's through the university tutoring office is kind of where I had matched with different people for English as well as Korean, and they actually kind of had tried to get me like, oh, you speak Spanish advanced level, please sign up to do Spanish because there's so many more people signed up for Spanish because it's a popular language to study.
Sure.
But a lot of, I mean, maybe not even due to some really complicated reasons, maybe there's less native Spanish speak there's less native Spanish speakers that are in the university than that are sort of out in the town.
Right.
So it's kind of harder in that way. But
And there are probably definitely more learners than native speakers, I'm sure. I mean,
yeah, for Spanish, especially in the university.
yeah.
But
I think it's interesting, though. I don't know what your stance on it is on this, but my fundamental belief is that a teacher should be responsible for the learning of the students. And I think that the teacher should first and foremost make sure that during the class hours that the learning takes place in a way that is useful and also engaging for the students. So that means, don't memorize, 200 different grammar tables and whatever. And I think if the teacher is really engaged during the class and does a good job of, showing the students that they can actually learn something, I think that the students naturally develop an interest in becoming that independent language learner. Not that that's necessarily a goal or something that I think is necessarily superior, but if you can somehow get students to develop an interest in a subject outside of school without being told to do it, that would be the ultimate goal for me if I were a teacher, get kids involved. Well, now I say kids, obviously we're talking
Yeah.
about college level here, but for some reason, any student is a kid. I don't know why. It's just one way to say it. But get the students involved because I don't know. Do you think it's easier for college students to motivate themselves compared to middle school kids?
It may be, but it's kind of hard to say, like specifically looking at well, in Korean, it's also because I'm at a lower language level. There are people in there that have kind of said, well, I need any language. For a lot of degrees, it's just a requirement to have any language up through a certain semester. Like one girl that I know is thinking about doing an international relations major, so she has to have through third or fourth semester, and a lot of humanities, just like any language through second semester, things like that, varies.
So they get forced to choosing a language, even though they might not have a huge interest in that particular language.
Yeah, but at the same time, Korean, the most people that choose Korean chose it because they're specifically interested in it.
Okay.
Because it's not something like French or Spanish or something where people might be like, well, I had a few years of this in high school, so I can finish it faster to get the requirement, right. You know? Like, technically, since I took 4 years of a foreign language in high school, for most non-language degrees, I wouldn't need to take a language in college.
Wow. And how did you feel that those skills developed in high school? Did you feel conversational and advanced level after it?
Yeah, I did kind of feel that way. Although technically what shows up on my transcript is that my high school Latin is covering that. Because L comes before S in the alphabet, I think. So the
it definitely does, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like my brother did 1 year more of French in high school than he had to graduate high school so that he wouldn't have to take a language in college no matter what he majored in.
Interesting. Is that worth it?
I don't know. I mean, I think that I had some really good Spanish teachers in middle school and high school, you know, and I just would kind of like, most of my friends took Spanish and we just like sometimes speak Spanish to each other outside the class and everything. And but I think my brother's experience with the French teachers was a little not that.
Okay.
For various reasons, you know, some of that's just personality. Like sometimes there's a teacher who's effective for a large portion of students and just not for you.
Right.
So that's another thing in like the formal classroom setting is the bigger the class, the less able you are to help everybody. And
for sure.
But at the same time, like, I think my brother still speaks a tiny bit of French. You know, when he came to visit me in Italy, he actually was like speaking French to some people that we ran into when we went out one night that spoke French better than English, at least.
I thought they were going to be like, "What? Why are you speaking to me in French?" That would be funny.
Because Italians don't. I think Italian school system approach to language is a little closer to the American one, where it's like, well, you have to study something up to some level. Then so a lot of people study English and speak it well, but a lot of people study English, don't speak it well. Yeah. A lot of people study just like I just picked French in the same way that I could have picked French in middle school, and then I'd be studying a whole different like literature and a whole different like culture, and I'd probably have fewer like, I don't know, leftist professors. Is that a way to describe a lot of people in the Spanish department? Let's say. Kind of like, you know, you can go buy this book, but I hear from one of my students, I can't give you the information, but I hear you can find it free on the internet, and it's not it's not the office that loses out, it's the corporation.
Right. Okay.
Like, what is literature? What is Latin America? And like Latin American literature class. Then I went to my Spanish American civilization class talking about what is culture? Oh, what is the city? What is civilization?
Wow.
So like that's, I feel like those aren't the conversations you have if you major in French, even though if you go to the French department, you're still studying like literature and linguistics of French. Sure. So that's kind of.
That's really interesting. I like that. I definitely see. I saw that in my high school here, and when I was going to high school in Denmark, I definitely saw most of the teachers definitely seem to be on that side of the political fence. I don't know if that's sort of a general, not a prerequisite, but maybe a trait. If you want to become a teacher, maybe you're more on that side. I don't know, but it's definitely funny that you have to sort of define all these concepts.
Yeah, so it's like it's really different to being in Korean and in East Asian studies and stuff, and it's like even my like TAs that are like 2 years older than me, I have to like address in a like really respectful way. And like, we don't really talk about politics a lot, especially because there's a lot of Chinese students. And then I just go to like my Spanish classes and I just call my 6-year-old professors by their first names and like pronouns and everything. And like,
yeah,
very different.
When I hear something that will deeply upset you,
mm-hmm.
when I went to elementary school in Denmark, we called our teachers by the first name.
Oh, so did we.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
They only called them Mrs. starting in like third grade.
Wait, you mean starting?
Yeah, so we called all of our teachers, all your like preschool teachers, I'm trying to think, like kindergarten, first grade, second grade, it's right. all like first name. Then you go to third grade through like high school. And then most teachers are like, you need to call, like, you call my Mrs. or Mr.
Okay, we did that forever.
Yeah, yeah.
From when we started school till we finished school, we call them by their names.
Yeah, I don't know. You don't. It's kind of an interesting relic that teachers almost always get called Mrs. and Mr.
What if they have a. So if they have a. If they happen to have a doctorate and working in middle school, which is really unlikely. Well, would you then have to call them doctor, whatever?
Probably not, no. Yeah, but like nobody knows how to call professors.
Right.
In America, it's a very common dilemma because if the professor doesn't say in the first day of class, like, this is how you should call me, you know, like one of my Spanish professors is like, just call me Ruben, like on the very first like email I sent before we even got to class. We're like, okay. And my professor's like, I'm too old. You just call me profe, which is like short for profesora in Spanish. You know, she's like, I'm too old for you to call me by my first name. It's like, okay. But like when I took, you know, science classes or something, I would be like, professor. And then they'd be like, oh, why are you calling me professor? But then like, you're like doctor so-and-so, like, oh, why are you doing that? And then you can't just go up to somebody and, you know, take some other like science class and be like, oh yeah, first day. They'll be like, why are you so informal? So just like no one actually knows what to call professors by in America.
That's hilarious. It should be like an official guideline or something.
I know.
University guidelines. And then, well, yeah.
You just have to say on the first day of class.
Right.
I think they just should.
But is a professor in America higher rated than a doctor?
Not really.
You become a professor automatically when you teach your college class, right? That's when you're a professor.
It's, yeah, it's a specific job title. Right. So not everyone that teaches a class
so is
a
I would a think professor. That being a doctor of arts or whatever, or have a PhD, would be better.
I mean, who knows? It's...
I guess the point is nobody knows.
The point is nobody knows. It's like a transition, a state of transition or something that, like, 50 years ago, everybody knew.
It's becoming more now, informal, like, or?
Yeah, like, it would have been, yeah, probably my mom would have called, like, nobody by their first name in college that was her professor.
Right.
Up until maybe, like, some of her, when she was a grad student, some of her advisors.
Right.
But then she probably would have called TAs by their first names. But now, you know, all my professors are my mom's age and they're just kind of like post like hippie generation and kind of grew up in a more informal, you know, like I never called my friends' parents Mr. or Mrs.
Right.
I always called them by their first names.
Yeah.
Or just by nothing, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. And especially when, I guess it's interesting for you when you study Korean where they have the mm-hmm. really extensive honorific system where... I mean, I don't even half understand it because I've never studied it, but, you know, there's so many different stages, right? And you need to kind of know your place, I guess.
Yeah, it's really like, I think, can I ask what year you were born? I think you're a little older than me.
88.
88, okay. So since you were born in 88 and I was born in 89, it would be completely inappropriate for me to call you by an regular informal pronoun
that really?
I was with children, people younger than me or my own age, unless we were like, I don't know, like lovers, maybe something like that. But I have to call you by older brother and not by your name and not by informal pronouns.
Well, but then... okay.
Never just be like, hey, Chris, how, hey, you, hey. No,
right.
Totally inappropriate.
It's so funny. And also,
when you're older than me.
Right. Here in Hungary, it's also really funny that the old formal system is still sort of, it's still alive and well. I mean, particularly between strangers, and in Denmark, it's gone for a very long time. I mean, you hardly ever use the informal pronoun, but here it's still very popular. And I remember one of my friends came here, and he told the story of how, on the very first day of moving into his apartment, he met an old lady on the stairwell, and he just kind of said, "Hey, how are you doing?" Pretty much. That's the only thing he knew in Hungarian, was like the hi. And she was like furious, and she didn't say a word. She just kind of stormed off, and she never talked to him again. Every time he met her on the stairwell, she would completely ignore him, just walk past. So it's funny how that system is in some different parts of the world. It still persists, but other places it's kind of going away. I know that the German one, it's also kind of, it's still there with the Sehen and Duzen, but it's also not as strict as it was. And it's just funny, and they also adjust. Like if I met someone on the stairwell, and I'd learned Hungarian for some time, so I knew this. So I said, "Good morning, sir," whatever the English equivalent is. And he just said, "Good morning," and then he changed it mid-sentence to the same that I said. And he was older than me, so it's kind of funny how, but obviously they've lived their whole life in that language, so they understand the finer details. But as a foreigner, it's just completely strange to even have such a difference, as especially from a Danish perspective, where we just don't care. If you meet, teachers, I don't know, professors, your parents or whatever, you just say, "Hey, what's up?" There's no distinction.
It's although I think some things about having the honorific system make it easier because you kind of just know certain things. It's like on the one hand, there's no way that I can say my name is Eleanor in the same way to a child or a peer who's approximately my age or an authority figure who's not far from age or a grandmother. Like I have to say all those things differently. But same time in English, I might be like, or like let's say like I'm hungry is a good example maybe because you'd be like. To a kid, you'd be like, "Oh, pack up the dog," but then to like an adult, you have to be like, "Oh, I don't even know." You have to say something really fancy. But
Right.
then, in English, you might be like to a kid, you might be like, "Well, my tummy is grumbly," and to your friends, you might be like, "I'm freaking hungry."
Right.
And then to an adult, you say, "So, in some ways, it's easier once you master it." But I think part of it too is like how used to people, how we are, how are people used to hearing foreigners speak their language?
Right.
Adds a lot to like the forgiveness system too. Like if somebody says something that's just kind of a little bit inappropriate in English, but I know they're not a native speaker, I know that. And if I know them well enough, I'll like let them know.
Yeah,
But
that's pretty funny, actually.
or like in Spanish too. Spanish speakers kind of are used to people that aren't native speakers, but or also because I think languages are spoken in a lot of places around the world. You might be like, "Oh, you're a foreigner. Did you learn somewhere else?" You kind of are, as opposed to like Hungarian, where it's like
Yeah.
people just aren't as used to that, I think. So,
For sure. And when they speak English, they're also not very used to that. So sometimes they can really say something quite offensive, even though they don't realize it. I don't take much note of it. It doesn't bother me because I know that they don't mean anything by it. But a good example is, like, I often have lunch in a cafe or something while I do some reading or something. And often when I come, the waiter is like, "So you're alone?" And it's like, "Yes, alone again,
Jeez,
and it's like, "Oh,
as a
just
customer,
you?"
it's like a customer service profession. I'm never worked in a restaurant, but I would say like, "So table for one,"
Right, exactly. That
and
Americans would
like
be
wait, we would say
experts
like
at
in
this.
America
Yeah, exactly. Americans would be expert at this level of service, but it's just funny that they don't mean anything by it. They're just sort of translating. And you get this, like, "Oh, you're just one, or is there any more people coming?" Or, and I was just like, "Yeah, whatever, I'm one."
translate something that's totally polite in Hungarian,
Yeah.
or they might not be able to think of any other way to express it in English, but
Right. Yeah, they often do that, and it's quite funny when it happens, because if you were a little bit more, I don't know, sensitive, I guess you could kind of tell them off for it. But yeah, whatever, they don't know, and I don't really, it doesn't bother me, but it's just funny.
I was like, "Where? Well, where I work at right now, I have because I work at like a cafe on campus." So a ton of my customers are like foreigners because that's where scientists, a lot of them are scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a big population of non-native speakers. And it's like, so I'm like, oh, that lady's so rude. I'm like, she's not rude. She's just Russian. You know, I've worked in sort of other situations where the difference in etiquette with foreign customers is so big that it actually like really causes emotional like distress. But like when some lady just comes in and she's like, can I have mocha or whatever. That's not a good Russian accent. I shouldn't do a Russian accent. But, you know, I'm just like, it's, yep, yes. Yes, you may.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. There's a big difference. For instance, people in the UK are extremely polite when they order things. So they'll say something. I mean, could I have is basically the most basic form. They say that all the time. But if you go to other countries, they might just say, coffee, please, or coffee, thanks. You know, whereas in English, you kind of, that is a little bit abrupt. It's a little bit stern, I would say. So you kind of have to preface it with something. But in other languages, it's completely, completely fine.
Yeah. Like I was telling one of my Korean friends, she was like kind of asking me about ordering. I was like, when you're making a request around here, the polite way to do it that's just okay to anybody is, can I get a?
Right.
Can I get a water? Excuse me, can we get some waters? Can I,
exactly.
You know, can I get a, but like, even when someone says, can I have, and that's very stern, like Russian voice. Then
right. The Germans have a funny way of doing it. They use the subjunctive. So they sort of say something like, I would like to have.
Yeah.
Ich hätte gern ein Kaffee. And it's pretty cute, I think. Because it's a theoretical situation. So I would really like a coffee. And then the answer is like, okay, well, go get one.
You know? I wonder if, because people say that, I'm from Wisconsin and basically I live my whole life here. And I guess there's a lot of, since Wisconsin was settled by a lot of Germans and Scandinavians, that people say there's a lot of influence in Wisconsin accent. You may not be able to hear my Wisconsin accent, but I definitely have a little bit of a one. But we are like really indirect when we're trying to be polite here too. Right. So I wonder if that comes from the Germans.
I guess it could, yeah.
Because like, I was wondering if you might be able to.
Yeah, that's very polite.
Because can you please, or just do it. It's just too direct. I was wondering if you might be able to.
Right.
And then if you can't, you say, no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
No, that's when you like are giving the person an opportunity. That's another thing about English politeness, I think, is like plausible deniability. Like give the other person, like, you know, the other person, if you're not their superior, they have their own, like.
They can say no. Not, yeah.
They can say no.
Well, it's funny. I was in America recently and there's service in the bars and restaurants and everywhere basically was just too much. It was too polite almost. It was like, you know, at some point, when you've been asked for the 10th time whether everything is okay, it's like, yeah, I mean, you asked us 2 minutes ago. I mean, we understand about you living off the tips and stuff, but I mean, this is going to get deducted, not added. No, I didn't say that, of course, but it was just, it's just a real culture shock for me. And I, you know, I really appreciate good service, but to me, there's also an element of it shouldn't be that visible. You know, I think good service is something that you don't see it that often, but obviously, the waitress who come up and ask you once in a while, is there anything you need? Can I get you some more coffee or whatever? But this constant nagging and like, how's the food? And then the manager comes over and he's like, oh, so what are you guys doing here? Yeah, we were trying to enjoy a nice beer and relax, but we keep getting harassed by the staff here.
In New York, right?
Yeah.
New York is a little like that, I think. It's like part of your job, especially if you wait tables, but even if you're like working in retail, is to like just read customers' minds and come up to them and when they need a request so they don't have to shout for you or look for you. Because like that's kind of rude to like shout for a waiter.
Of course.
You just kind of like look around in this really like kind of pointed way and then the waiter will be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like,
right. Yeah.
So it's really different, you know, then that's a problem that Americans have when they go abroad as customers. They're just like, how do I get any service around here? You're just supposed to go up to the front. And
right. Yeah, it's so funny to see Americans, and also just guests from other European countries when they come visit me here. I always like warn them that there's no service here whatsoever. Like, if you go to a really touristy place, of course there will be because they know they can get good tips there. But if you go to like a local restaurant, they just don't care. It's like you can sit there and wait for hours if you don't do anything, you know? So it's funny to go to America where it's such a an opposite, really. I enjoyed it. I just didn't enjoy the whole tipping, but that's a whole different
Oh
discussion.
yeah, it's a whole
And
look.
I think that America is also slowly realizing that it's stupid, so maybe it'll change in the next, I don't know, 20, 30 years, who knows. Maybe get some good minimum wages and get rid of the whole tipping instead. I don't know. It just seems really bad. But anyway, let's move on to some language related
Oh yeah.
discussions. Because I really want to. You said you stumbled upon the Polyglot community like a year ago, and I
Yeah,
just
a
wanted to
little
get.
older, I guess.
All right, I just wanted to get your sort of reflections on that because that's what happened to me about 2.5 years ago. So I just wanted to compare notes. And what did you think when you found all these? Well, I guess you found my podcast is one of the first ones. So,
Yeah.
but what was your opinion of the whole? Like, what did you first opinions of the whole community feeling?
Well, I mean, the first things that I was looking for was different, I guess, tools for learning. And then I happened to find there's this whole other community. I actually think it's really interesting to compare kind of the polyglot community versus there is also kind of the like Korean learning community that I found. And there, it's really interesting kind of the way some people have this like hyper focus on, just keeping finding a new language, and maybe they keep doing that through European languages, and then they stumble on a hard one, and they're just like, this is where I am for a while, you know? Like, I kind of wanted to learn Korean because it was really different. I was like, I already speak Spanish and Italian. What am I gonna do next? Like, French? No. I'm gonna do go to the other side of the
A
world
lot
and
of people
get.
do that, to be fair, and I have absolutely nothing against those people because you get so much coverage from those Italian, Spanish, French. I mean, that's a huge percentage of the world that either has that as a native language or as a second language. So
Oh
I
yeah.
definitely totally understand it. And when people when I tell people what languages I speak and are studying currently, people are like, "So what about these European languages? Do you know any?" And I have to say, "Well, German, Danish." And they're like, they almost look, it's funny when you go to the Polyglot meetups and there's no judgment. Let me just preface that. But when people come up to you, sometimes you might hear something like, "Oh, you don't speak French?" I guess it's some kind
Out a
of.
little bit. I did not hear what you said. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying that if you go to some of these Polyglot meetings and you say that you don't speak French, people kind of get a little bit surprised. They're like, "You don't speak French?" And, I don't know if that gets lost in the tone again, and they mean it, they don't mean anything of it, but it almost sounds like, "Why didn't you study French? Of course you should study French." But for me, it's just like I wasn't interested, and I'd rather choose my languages based on like where my life is and where I am. So, and I'm
Yeah.
sure I'll get to European languages once, but for now, I'm just doing where I'm living, basically.
Yeah, weren't you? Don't I remember hearing something you were talking about French and then moved to Hungary and you're like, well, I guess it's Hungarian or. Yeah, and it's like.
That's exactly what happened. I was like, "Okay, it's time to learn European languages. I'm going to learn 4 languages in a year, no problem." And then it's like, "Yeah, I'm going to live in Hungary." Okay. So let's quit this whole French idea for now. But I hope to get back to it next year. But I definitely do want to learn some European languages because I do live in Europe and it makes sense to have these sort of like French and Italian and Spanish, they're almost international in a way that so many people learn them as second languages. There are so many groups, so many places around the world where these languages are spoken as a second language, perhaps most importantly, Spanish, but definitely also French. You go to Canada, or it's a diplomatic language in many countries, and definitely in Europe. So you'd have a large French population, and there are countries with majorities and minorities outside France as well. So you get a lot of mileage for those languages, and they're so similar to English that it almost seems silly not to.
Yeah, but I don't know. It also comes back to like what's the point of learning a language? Like I actually when I was like 14, I believe 13, 14, I found some popular book about linguistics in the library and I was like, "Oh my God, linguistics is the best. I'm going to major in linguistics in college." And that did not last because I went to college and I took one linguistics class, and the kinds of papers you have to write in linguistics classes are just like,
Yeah.
they're just weird. They're not for me.
It's very technical.
Yeah, so that's kind of what's nice about being like in a Spanish, like being a Spanish major is that I do a lot of just like Spanish applied linguistics.
Right.
You know, I'm actually taking like a comparative linguistics of the Romance languages class taught in
Wow.
English next semester that's kind of cross-list between all the Romance language departments. So that'll be a lot of fun actually. I'll try and like brush up my time. But oh, anyway, so it's like, what's the purpose of learning a language? Is it because you think you might travel? Is it because you're interested in the culture? Is it because you have friends that speak that language? Is it because your future father-in-law only speaks that language? You know, there's all these like all these reasons, and I think some people are just kind of like, well, I just want to keep learning languages, which is fine. But for me, part of the reason to keep learning new languages is because I'm interested in, I kind of see grammar as being like a puzzle. So grammar is a little too easy for me. So then I have to challenge myself by just talking and not doing so much grammar and studying.
Right.
But to learn a different language kind of breaks your mind open a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So I think if the only reason you're learning language is purely to learn languages and to learn about different languages, I think learning ones from all over the world is good. But then at the same time, if you just want to learn a huge number of languages, it's like, yeah, just learn all the European languages in a row. You know, I'm a native English speaker, so I already speak Spanish and I speak some Italian. So next time we learn French. And then since the northern Germanic languages are easy for English speakers too, you know, I could go down the list
Yeah.
of just how easy they are for an English speaker, but okay, I'll learn French, I'll learn Dutch, I'll learn Danish, I'll learn Norwegian, I'll learn Swedish, I'll learn Portuguese, I'll learn German,
Yeah.
like in the order of how easy they supposedly are. Or kind of what I'm doing right now is going from the bottom.
Right.
Korean. I think I'm going to work on Mandarin a little bit now too, because I have a lot of Chinese friends right now.
Nice.
A lot of some of whom that I met from tutoring English and others that I met in Korean class actually.
Wow.
They're probably almost as many citizens of the People's Republic of China as are US citizens in
Right.
my Korean class.
Right.
And then another big chunk that's international students from other Asian countries or of Asian descent. So it's kind of interesting.
It's a huge language in America, as far as I know, Chinese, so definitely very useful. But you touched on something very important then, and it's a topic that we often revisit here on the podcast, where the motivation question comes in, and it's like, is it enough motivation to just want to learn a language? And I'm pretty torn on the idea, because I think that we can do anything we want. I don't think motivation necessarily makes it impossible to do something if we don't have the right motivation. But on the other hand, I would discourage people to learn languages based on vanity alone. But on the other hand, you can't deny there is an element of that too. Like, look at my badge, I speak all these languages, right?
I learned Esperanto last weekend.
Yeah,
Woo!
congrats. well, yeah, I speak Esperanto too, but it's a good example. But I think that it's just, people seem to sometimes ignore the whole like vanity aspect, the whole self, I guess, in a way you're improving your own character. If it were a video game, you're kind of upgrading, and this,
Love.
you can't deny that at all. But on the other hand, it's a very weak form of motivation, and I definitely felt that with Russian. I couldn't really find any big reasons, and people always ask me, so when are you going to Russian? I'm like, didn't really have any plans to go to Russia. And it was like, when you look at how little I put into the language, you can see that that's probably a motivational issue there. But do I believe I can still learn Russian without the proper motivation? Yeah, probably, but it's not recommended at all. So I would definitely try to find some practical reasons for languages.
Yeah. I mean, and when I say motivation, I don't necessarily mean like you have to have the right reasons. I just mean there has to be some reason that you start. Like, even if you make a decision, you can be a person that chooses to make a decision totally randomly. But also for me, for Korean, I was kind of like, there was one TV show that I really liked that was a reality show, actually, that I watched subtitled, and I wanted to watch other similar things. A lot of them weren't subtitled. And I was like, well, I'm gonna start learning. I just like the way it sounds.
Yeah, me
I
too, me
just
too.
like the way Korean sounds. So then I kind of was like, well, I'm gonna start learning a little Korean. I started to start watching more like K-dramas, which is how a lot of people enter into Korean culture. I think probably a majority of people in my Korean class, maybe,
Right.
probably started from dramas. There's other ones. There's like people liked K-pop, people that their grandmother was Korean, people
Why
that
is
do
it
Thai.
all starting with K? Is it like I like K food, but I don't know if I would call it
Yeah.
that. It's kind of funny.
So, you know, it kind of comes in, if it's like meant to be, it kind of builds on itself, I feel like a little bit. So I was like, I'm interested in learning language, so I started watching more of the TV shows. I got really interested in that, and that gave me more motivation.
Right.
Things like that, as opposed to I'm kind of like, well, I'd like to bring my Italian back up because but it's like I'm not that interested in Italian culture. My I don't have any plans to go to Italy anytime soon because I would like to go to Korea after I graduate and be in Asia. So then sort of other Asian countries is the travel opportunity
Yeah.
there. And you know, like I was kind of like very depressed when I was in Italy. It's part of the reason I didn't make a lot of friends, but it's like one local person that I did meet that didn't speak English was this guy that turned out to be married towards the end of the time that I knew him. I discovered that. So I don't have a big motivation to keep in touch with him, you
Right.
know.
Understand.
And then with Korean, you know, I made friends. I really like my friends, even though I kind of was like, I'm gonna go and try and find these friends to practice language and culture and learn about culture. Like, actually became pretty close. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
That's cool. I definitely agree with the idea that you can definitely find, I don't want to say passion for the language, but you can definitely pick up interest in a language after you started studying it. You can discover new TV shows. You can discover, a lot of people talk about Japanese culture like manga or anime. You know, they find all these great things after they start learning the language, and then that gives them motivation to keep going. And I definitely believe in that as well. And also, when you start to see results, that usually also pushes you a lot further when you realize, oh wow, I can read this sentence, or oh, I understand that word on that sign, or you know, these little wins that shows your brain that you're actually progressing and not just wasting your time all the time.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, I kind of touched this before that I tried learning a bunch of languages when I was a kid with whatever kind of materials, the library and stuff, and nothing really stuck. But the once I noticed that Korean stuck, I felt like I could do anything in this
Right.
world, you
That's amazing, yeah.
Like the fact that I can listen to somebody talk and I can understand a lot of the time, I'm at, understand the thrust of the sentence, even if I don't know exactly what every part is doing.
Right. Yeah,
Or,
oh,
you
that's
know,
perfect. Yeah, that's I understand
learning
that.
like a baby, just listening to a lot and talking a lot.
So is that your preferred, let's call it strategy or method? It's just tons and tons of input, or do you have any kind of tactics or any kind of paradigms that you use for learning languages on your own?
I do kind of do the I do memorizing to various extents and grammar study.
That, what do you use for that,
I
flashcards?
use Anki,
Anki, yeah.
Anki, and I use generally flashcard approaches that put zero English on the flashcard.
Right, Gabriel Weiner,
Yes, I
yeah.
found him very inspiring, his episode on your show. I went after I heard that episode. I was working out at the big mall the other town, so I went to Barnes and Noble and I went and bought his book and
Wow, that's amazing.
Korean stuff, and then I went home and ordered some more Korean things.
That's cool.
And I think especially for if you want to learn to read an alphabet, or just if you want to learn to read the sounds of a language, especially if it has a relatively like phonetic or phonemic writing system, I don't think there's anything better than his method.
Right.
But yeah, so I kind of adapted parts of that for vocabulary, and especially learning Korean, there's such different like correspondence, I think, between European languages. People say that you can, you know, learning to read a newspaper is easier learning than a children's book because academic words have such one-to-one correspondences. So many of them like come from the same, borrowed from the same languages. Certainly for Spanish, that's true for me that a novel and originally written in Spanish is going to be a lot harder than a newspaper.
Right.
I hear it's the opposite for Japanese and
Oh,
even
really?
Korean. Papers are very dense.
Okay.
Like in Korean writing, they almost never use Chinese characters anymore, but they still show up in the newspaper from time to time, just for fun,
Wow.
just to like keep you on your toes.
That's interesting.
But the
So they use that phonetic or phonemic writing system.
yeah, it's
Right.
pretty phonemic, like morphemic slash
And now we're getting into some technical
phonemic.
linguistic terms that, for the most part, people would not know there's a difference, and I am not even sure I do. So let's just assume that they're
If you have to
similar.
learn Spanish, anytime you see anything written down in Spanish, you know how to pronounce it in any dialect of Spanish that you control,
Right.
basically. Because everything is there in the writing. There are some things that you're like, why is this written in two different ways? But then, for example, in Spain, they say like a lot, they say cenar, and they say cenar. So it's like things like that. So it's very straightforward. Korean is a little bit more like, it's not as bad as English, but it's kind of like with French. Maybe that there are some things, there are some words that just you kind of have to, maybe some ending, let's say, that's spelled the way it used to be pronounced, but it's not pronounced that way
All
anymore.
right.
Or you have to know like a lot of rules, but it's basically there. So it's a little bit more like French or something than Spanish, which is really just like you look at the letters and you know what they're doing. And
English is absolutely terrible. I don't understand how it went so badly wrong at some point because there's no rhyme or reason.
English has a lot more sounds than exist in
Right.
Latin.
And I just
Sound.
feel so bad for people learning English, but because when you think about English, you're like, oh, it's so easy. Everyone speaks it, right? And then the poor guy from Japan or something learning it, he has to deal with all these words that look the same but don't sound the same. It's like,
Yeah.
how? Like, why? Like the classic one is that through thorough thought or whatever, like three
Yeah.
ways of saying TH.
Cough is the one. Cough through thought. O-U-G-H.
And
I think that's all of
was
them.
it trough?
Trough. Trough rhymes with cough.
It's
So.
just hilarious that you can have such a diversity. And I think a lot of languages do have that ambiguity sometimes, and that makes it harder to
Slough.
learn.
Slough is another one.
Slough, yeah. It's really interesting. But cool, so you made a lot of your own flashcards and you
So
used
I kind
images
of
instead of words, and I think that's a
images,
good
lots of
method.
sound. I
Oh,
actually
yeah?
kind of so did the there's another one I got from one of your podcast guests when I was starting out the when you can do an Anki, the sub to you can take the subtitles of a show
Oh,
and
yeah.
turn it into flashcards like with audio and multimedia, and I think it's just amazing. And kind of what I do with that too is that I have a ton of stuff. It's not even necessarily like shows that I want to rewatch or things. Korean shows usually stop after a pretty short period of time, so it's not like if I studied one season, if I was studying English, I studied hard one season of How I Met Your Mother. Other seasons of How I Met Your Mother would just get easier. It's not quite like that, but what I'll do is when I'm studying a grammar structure or a word, I'll go and search in there and find my examples from there. And then I have them in audio and they're more natural because a written script is closer to speech than writing is, even though it's kind of between, you know.
Oh, definitely.
And it's really fun to study like that, I think.
I think it's the best way to practice your spoken language because the talk shows or sitcoms or something that illustrate daily life use a lot of the language that you would use on daily life, except if you're watching, like, I don't know, House or some medical drama. It's like all foreign words. But I guess if you're studying Greek or something, maybe it's useful. I don't know. I did that with Russian. I watched a sitcom, and like you, I didn't understand every word, but I could, after a while, I could sort of get the meaning of each sentence. So I would start to watch it and enjoy it, because I think it's tough to watch a TV show if you don't understand anything. It's kind of tough.
Yeah, and I do still kind of watch a lot of stuff with subtitles, and I know people are kind of against that, but it's like this is what I'm watching for fun right now.
They're split, I think.
And yeah, and I definitely will still just pick up words from that, like God, even pronouns that aren't really used in writing but that are used a lot in speech. I was like, oh, I know, I just figured out what's going on here. And a lot of the subtitles like aren't very good because it's really hard to translate Korean to English, but then that actually can be helpful sometimes.
And you have to
The
limit yourself
bad
so much.
subtitle, because you're like, oh, that's what's going on in Korean.
Right.
And then I can think of a better way to express that feeling in English, but it kind of, so it's
Yeah.
kind of interesting.
It's like a double-edged sword, I think, because you do have a very limited space to translate very complex sentences usually. And I don't know if Korean is the same, but Russian can sometimes be very succinct. So you have a lot of meaning in, very few words. So when they speak a longer dialogue, which would fill up, a subtitle, then the English translation would need to add so many words for it to be a complete translation. So it's often an interpretation of what they say instead of a translation, which they do often. So for me, it's like a double-edged sword. It can help you to understand and also enjoy the show, which gives you more input. But the in terms of using it to build your own vocabulary, to learn some collocations and stuff, it could be a little dangerous sometimes because you're not entirely sure. But if you're at a high level, like you say, then maybe you can evaluate it yourself and then decide what to pick up on and what to just leave.
Yeah, and I never watch anything in Spanish with subtitles anymore if I can help it. Even though I'm still missing parts of it, for example, because it's like, well, it does force me to to listen instead of whatever. But it's, oh, you know, also my Spanish is a very advanced level, so it's really different being a beginner. But
Right.
yeah, I think the thing, one of the other things with like subtitles and translations in general too, is that different languages can be ambiguous in really different ways.
Oh, yeah.
So that's actually a big problem with Korean. Like, subjects of a sentence are optional, but politeness level is always expressed, which is completely opposite of English, where there's a lot of neutral ways to say something in regards to politeness, especially if you're stating a fact, but you always have to put a subject to the sentence, you
Right.
know? So.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't envy the translators' jobs always. They must have a really tough time because they have to convey the deeper meaning, but also they have such a limited amount of space to do so. It's tough. So any other methods or strategies or techniques that you've come across? Yeah, I remember you said one of the first reasons that you actually came across this community of language learners was that you were looking for methods or strategies. Did you ever find anything that really stuck apart from the flashcards?
Oh, another thing that I really like for Spanish that I don't use as much when I'm in school because I'm reading so much in Spanish anyway, is that I do enjoy different things about Blue and Reed Lang. I think are really helpful, both of
Right.
those, for helping find things at your level, if you're lower level, for Blue especially, or for saving the words easily on the Reed Lang. So I do like both of those. I think it's really important to just, I think all the different ones, like strategies people have for pronunciation and for listening, I think are really important early on. I think there's one that I actually kind of got from this kind of Korean language more focused thing where it's just listen to stuff. listen to the same things over and over again, and find a way to listen to it where it doesn't matter if you don't understand everything. Just like pour it into your ears.
The input,
because that's, yeah, kind of like the infant theory. I think adults can learn faster than infants, because infants have to learn like what's an apple and this is how you say apple. Right. And adults can just be like, okay, I'm going to make a flashcard with a picture of an apple on one side and the word for apple on the other. And I'll, you know, or even just, you might be told the word for apple once and know it.
Yeah.
But I think just kind of having uncomprehensible input. And what I do is I have a couple, some stuff that's a little more geared towards language learners, but that still kind of speaks at an intermediate or advanced level. Different places, and then also just a regular radio show that I found a podcast for, that the DJ is like an actress I really like, and I kind of want to talk like her.
All right.
So I just listened to her podcast. And then every once in a while you're kind of like, oh, I wonder what that means. And that's still part of learning, I think.
Of course, yeah.
For the infant theory, you know. But at the same time, when you go through and you memorize words and grammar structures, I think that what that helps you do is just comprehend the input faster. And then the input is what really like makes you learn, in the more like get the language as being an instinct rather than as being an intellectual exercise. Cause I think that for me has always been a challenge, cause seeing how the grammar pieces move around is a little bit easy for me, but actually just comprehending and producing is more important and more fundamental.
Right.
So I think that's kind of how I view it right now, is I just listen to stuff.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. And the whole comprehensive input.
Comprehensible input.
Yeah. Yeah. Just basically tons of input. And for me, the struggle is, as I mentioned before, if I don't understand enough, then it's really hard to just keep doing that active learning or active listening that's required to actually pick up anything. And I mean, I should do more. I definitely feel a little guilty, but at the same time, it can be tough. So
that's why I kind of do podcasts and stuff too, because then I can just listen to it in between listening to something in English while I'm doing my laundry or on the bus or things like that. And obviously, since you're in Hungary, when you're outside, you could just take out your headphones and get a little bit of that comprehensible input, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But, I think listening to, I think active listening is a little bit overrated.
Okay.
In some ways, you know, like, I think the reason that English is easy for people is that it's so easy to find, like, it's supposedly easy to learn, is that it's so easy to find that comprehensible input that you care about and that's not available in your own language. It's just kind of a little bit more present, a little more there.
Right.
Sometimes I go looking for Spanish podcasts and I go into Spanish-speaking countries' iTunes stores and half the top, or more than half the top podcasts in the category are English language, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So maybe I need to just find a better place to look than iTunes store. But before I got more involved in language learning, I was a little bit more involved in some gaming communities online, and most people that play games speak English well. And I knew a lot of people, actually. It was a Hearthstone community I was more involved in, and I knew a lot of people that kind of were coming from other places, maybe like local physical card games, let's say, where they didn't have to use a lot of English, and then they were coming and becoming like professional gamers or content creators or whatever in English, and just like, it's just there, right? So I think, but I think when you're listening to something you don't understand, you just have to listen to the sound. So you have to find something that you like the sound of.
That also helps with the pronunciation, which is kind of tricky at the beginning, or the... What is it? What is that? The melody of the language? I once called it rhapsody, but I think the actual word is prosody.
Yes, prosody.
And rhapsody is something completely different. But that was a fun episode of me calling something rhapsody, and my very polite guest was like, maybe. And we just moved on. But anyway... the past.
Yeah, and I think like trying to find, like I always try and find something. I think it's good to find somebody your same gender, about your same age, especially if you're speaking a language that's only spoken in one country. Then that's a lot easier to start to like sound like you're your own age, to like get somebody like, oh, they're cool, I want to sound like them. And then even if you don't, then I think that that helps a lot, because you kind of, you don't have this danger, which it's kind of beyond repair in my Spanish right now, that I sound like a textbook and I would have to live someplace for a while before I stop sounding like a textbook. But
Yeah, it's definitely a problem. Well, I don't know if it's a problem, but it's definitely, you really have to be careful about definitely getting more input. And I guess, I don't know about, would it help if, what do you think about tutoring, getting conversational tutoring early on? In learning a new language,
I think it is probably a really good idea. When I haven't really had a chance to try it yet, because I was super broke when I started learning Korean. So that's kind of part of why I went to take a class in school, because I was like, it'll just, you know, there'll be a teacher that will talk.
Right.
And that will do things. So,
But I guess that classroom style,
yeah,
when you got
classroom is really different.
You got 20 students or more, and you have to each learn something and get some attention from the teacher. So it can be tough to actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard from a lot of people, they have done, oh yeah, I did 3-4 years of French or Spanish in school, and I was like, oh okay, so you speak it quite well now. And they're like, no, I can't say a word. It's like, what?
Yeah,
that's really crazy.
I think that I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of, what am I trying to say? It's like everyone has to learn a language, so then there's not maybe the greatest teachers out there.
Right.
You know, in some countries too, like in East Asian countries especially, kind of any native English speaker can get a job teaching English.
Right. Yeah.
And the biggest thing that you can kind of offer the kids in that case is just to talk to them, and talk. But I don't know. I would like to try conversational tutoring. I'm going to, like I said, I'm planning on doing Mandarin over the summer, but I do have some friends that I'll be able to like talk to.
Right.
Actually, a friend of my, one of my good friends is going to be TAing the beginning level Chinese in the fall, so
nice.
I'm gonna let her practice on me a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, or I mean, just the general idea of language exchanges. Mm-hmm. You talked about that earlier. That's definitely one way you can get that conversation practice that a tutor often can bring without having to pay for it. So for many people, that's a great option. And as long as you set the right boundaries, I think that's a very useful way. Sometimes, it, you know, that's a little bit too much giving and too much taking from one part. But if you just set up a timer or something and make it, you know, 50-50, then nobody is usually getting upset.
Start with whatever language the person is bad at, too. I had that problem with my first person I tried to do Korean language exchange with. Well, he had a couple problems in the end. But one of the problems was that when we first met, my Korean was terrible. So even though his English wasn't great, so that was bad.
Right.
You know, that so my Korean, like non-existent English was not very good at all. But we had to like kind of speak English in the beginning to connect. But then we accidentally covered in English everything I already knew how to say in Korean.
Right.
Like, where are you from? It's like, oops, covered that, you know?
Yeah. It can get a little tricky. I haven't really explored the language exchanges too much, because I just enjoy, I mean, I'd rather teach someone Danish for an hour and then pay someone to teach me Hungarian an hour than having to find an exchange, because it's just so technical with the whole, you know, giving and taking. And
and
I saw some people sharing a document where they listed like 600 conversational topics or something, and it just doesn't seem that natural. You know, you're sitting there and you're trying to make conversation with somebody you don't really know in a language you really don't know. It just seems like a very awkward situation for me personally, at least.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good topics. Like, if you could meet one person from history, who would it be? That's great if you're a little more advanced. amazing conversation topic, things like that. But I think part of it too is just kind of a little bit letting go of having that formal relationship too, where maybe I think about this actually a lot because a lot of people, being a native English speaker, especially for me, or being a high level English speaker for you, that a lot of people kind of just want to practice English. There's kind of this attitude that maybe I had a little bit unexamined. I'm looking at it again that a lot of kind of maybe Americans studying abroad have, where they don't want to, they, you know, or traveling to avoid speaking English with people completely and to maybe like lie and say you're from Lithuania and your English is appalling in order to get people to speak whatever
Definitely.
Japanese with you. But if your goal is like just to communicate with people and connect with people, then you will end up probably speaking a mix of languages throughout. So if you meet someone and you kind of like the if you just really need to communicate with somebody and you don't you're both bad at each other's languages, the way you're going to do it is you're going to say as much as possible in their language. And then you're going to use your language when you can't think of the word in their language. And I don't think that that's, you know, maybe not for like a friendship where you sit down and chat over coffee, maybe not a great way for languages to kind of flow, but I think just kind of trying to make friendships starting in target language is something, but, you know, when people come to the US and they want to learn English and then they don't they don't want to speak their native language. Like,
Of
there's
course.
that. There are those people. Or, you know,
Well, it's just
like,
that both parties come with exactly the opposite, like, goal.
yeah.
If you're learning Japanese and a Japanese person is learning English, and you meet up for an exchange, then you're in there for exactly the opposite reasons, and
Yeah.
that's really strange for me.
So I think maybe starting out with things like the timer or using as much as possible of the language that someone's a beginner in is a good way to go. But I think once, you know, if you just make a friend that has a different native language from yourself, the friendship will kind of find its own language in the end. And, you know, I think native English speakers are really sensitive to not being used for English practice. But then that has to go the other way too, where you don't want your friendship with somebody to be based on using them for language practice, but maybe you're using their language as much as possible because it connects with them better, or because of politeness, because the people around speak English, even speak very little English or no English, or you know, things like that is kind of where it goes. But then the trick is to not let everything pull back towards English,
Yeah,
being like
it's
common
always a
language in the world, you know.
struggle. It's always tough. I mean, learning languages is not really that easy in
No,
general.
it's not.
I don't know whoever said that, but honestly, it's not easy. I mean, there are so many moving parts, and there's so much to keep, you have to keep going, and you have to learn so many things. So I definitely realize that you're learning a language, if you've done it, if anyone's listening and you've learned a foreign language, I mean, good job, because it's really not easy. And
Yeah.
I mean, it's good for this podcast because we can keep talking about it for years, but at the same time, it's also I think about this a lot, that it isn't really that easy. The process is simple, but doing it for an extended period of time is quite difficult.
Yeah. And you know, for me, like I like to, I don't speak really any French or German, but I could, I went when I was studying in Italy up into it's actually it's a nice coincidence. I was studying in Florence and my uncle had a sabbatical in Strasbourg. So I went to visit him with my mom and we went through Switzerland and Strasbourg's right on the border with Germany. So I just like walked 2 miles to Germany one day. And you know, just be like, ein Kaffee bitte, like just like things like that, and then be like, okay. And also, can you explain this menu item to me since we're not in a tourist town and you're the only waitress that speaks English? Thank you. But I'm gonna say like And I'm gonna be like a ugly American and order coffee at the same time as the rest of my food.
Right, yeah,
Like,
that's
no, I want coffee and soup together.
yeah, that's an interesting mix. Not something I see a lot here. But you can definitely do it. I mean, as long as you're not the obnoxious American who just insists on speaking very loud American English, and the waiter's like, "What's going on here?"
Well, and I think there's like kind of it's called register switching in linguistics, where you just talk in different ways to different kinds of people. And I think if you've learned even one other language, you become more sensitive to the fact that you need to speak in a more standard, registered and non-native speakers
Right.
rather than speaking loudly, and you need to just keep rephrasing things
Yeah.
that are understood.
Yeah,
I think that kind of just comes out of it, that out of that
definitely.
sense of being the one that just speaks loud. I think that's a, I hope that's an old stereotype. Do you still see that around?
Not too often. If people are drunk, maybe it does happen, but.
But then they're also drunk. Sometimes loud because they're drunk.
Right. No, I'm not sure about the whole, screaming when people don't understand. Maybe on the phone that does seem to happen still, because people are like, "Oh, he doesn't understand me. Better speak louder."
It might be the connection, you
Yeah,
know.
maybe you're not coming through loud enough. Well, it's really funny to see. I've seen it, especially with, let's say, older people. If they're on the phone and the other person is really quiet, then they feel like they have to shout as well. It's like, why? That doesn't make any sense.
Old people are deaf,
But
but
you're
they don't have
speaking into a
hearing aids.
microphone.
Yeah, I know.
Just because the other person is quiet doesn't mean your connection is quiet. So the other person is probably like bleeding out of the ears because you had to scream.
Well, people that are in denial about their own hearing loss have a poor judgment of how loudly
Right.
they're speaking, I
Well, they
think.
have a poor judgment, full stop.
It that way, I guess.
But anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've had a
For having me.
fantastic time, and really enjoyed discussing some of these language learning topics, the evergreen topics
Oh, yes.
of today's polyglot conundrums. I don't know. I have no
I don't
idea where
know
I'm going with
how great
this.
a use of, if that was a really natural use of the word conundrum there.
I have no idea. There's a TV show in England called Countdown, and they have countdown conundrums once in a while, so that's why I got that word. I don't know if it only applies to puzzles, but anyway, I guess this is a kind of a puzzle. But
It's always a puzzle, I think, in some level. You just got to keep solving it. Even your own language, even
that's true.
your English, even everything like
Oh
that.
yeah,
So.
for sure. I mean, the thing I've noticed that, and people tell me, is that after I started studying Russian and Hungarian, and I stopped using English as much, my English has actually degraded a little bit. So it's always
Interesting.
a trade-off. It's always a
Oh, yeah.
trade-off. Like one of my friends, who I write in English with, and always have, he corrected a grammar mistake, and he's never done that before, and he was like, "This Hungarian is really rubbing off on your English." And I was like, "Oh boy, oh no, please don't disappear, English. I need you."
I don't think your English is in any danger of disappearing anytime soon.
That's a
You
good.
probably do you still listen to some things in English, right? You still have a few friends you only talk to in English. Yeah, you still listen
Yeah,
to
well,
show English.
my own podcast, I listen to my own voice all the time. No, not really. But yeah, definitely still watch a lot of English stuff. It's just, I think the corrupting part is so not so much that I hear a lot of other stuff. It's just when you have to form unusual sounds, like for instance, the S's and the SH sounds in Hungarian and Russian for a part, they're really different than the English. So when I read a Hungarian text, I have to remember every time I see an S, it's not S, it's sure. So it's like, and it corrupts. So sometimes when I read English, my brain is thinking SH, but I can't say that in English. That would sound very silly, or shilly. But
I know if corrupt is like the right word, because I think it's just,
interference, maybe? I don't know.
interference is more of the, interference would be like the technical linguistic term, I think. But
Right.
when you have It's just kind of what your brain is doing.
Yeah.
And there's ways, it's actually, I don't know if you find it hard to keep your languages separate, but I definitely found we had to do a presentation in Korean class, even though it was second semester. So it was very stressful. And we're allowed to use a little bit of English. And I accidentally started speaking Spanish for a second
Right.
because so when I go up in front of people, I feel like I'm speaking Spanish. You know, I have
No.
a, I didn't talk about it much, but I'm doing like local comedy right now. And I always want to write jokes that go through different languages. I'm
Right.
like, I can't do that. I do have a joke about how I'm afraid I might accidentally start speaking Spanish. Y bueno, sí, es que no me comprenden, que me perdonen.
Right.
But I think it's like also enough people have studied enough Spanish to understand if you don't understand me, forgive me, which is
Right.
what I just, you know.
It's kind of
And or
funny.
like when I'm just saying like yeah to people, I'll say it in Korean, like nay 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 nay, like in
Right.
any language. So.
Oh, I definitely feel that a lot. I remember when I just I don't know, I've been doing Russian for a few months, and then I overslept on a school trip, so everyone was like, I had like 20 missed calls, and people were like, "Where are you?" And I was like, "What? Is it today? I thought it was tomorrow." They're like, no, we're on the train. We're halfway through Denmark now, on the way to Germany." I'm like, "What?" So they're like, "Yeah, you find a train on your own and you can join us later." So I was like really kind of almost, I felt almost jet lagged because I was just rushed out of bed and I just had to do all these things that I didn't prepare. Like I had to do laundry before I could go, all these things. And when I finally made it to Germany after like 4 or 5 hours in the train, I was so, my brain was so confused that when I stepped out, I couldn't remember the German word for yes, and I just cycled through like Esperanto, Russian, Danish, and eventually I made it to German. I was like, "Wow, what just happened?" And they were just looking at me really, really strange, like, "What's wrong with this kid?" But yeah, so I definitely feel it. And also, when you're studying really foreign languages, it's very easy to confuse them with other really foreign languages. So I'm studying Russian and Hungarian. And they're not really that similar. They're not even related. But my brain kind of puts them in the similar department, or I don't know. I'm actually reading a book on neuroscience right now, so I should know the technical term. But anyway, my brain's like linking them together. So when I think about a word in Hungarian, it might go to the Russian word first. And sometimes I'm not sure which is which. So I definitely experience the interference firsthand. And yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah, part of what I've been trying to do to like untangle my Spanish and Italian is that when I do study Italian now, which is not often, I usually use Spanish duo Spanish oh
Hello?
Duolingo for Spanish speakers. That's what I was trying to go for
Right.
Italian, because then that like throws all the differences right in my face.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be like zanahoria carota, and I'm not gonna, you know, like put some right there. But sometimes I think, well, but then I'm encountering them both at the same time. So is that tangling them more? It's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't
It's
know. I think as long as you're a high enough level in both, I think it should be really, really good because the idea of learning a foreign language through another language is really good. But I don't know. You have to be
Obviously, a
really
lot of
careful.
people do that for English. It helps a lot of people's English.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you have to be careful though, because if you're at an early stage, the interference is just too great. I mean, that's one of the things I remember from the Polyglot workshops I attended with Richard Simcott and Alex Rawlings, and they kept talking about, if you want to learn more languages than one, be sure that they're not from the same group. So Richard talked about how you shouldn't learn Italian and Spanish at the same time, but you could learn Italian and Russian for sure, no problem. I mean, I still don't recommend people learning multiple languages, but the interference is definitely way reduced, so.
Yeah. Well, I think starting a new language in the same time is what's really the problem.
Right, I
Or in
agree.
too short of a period, if you're continuing with the language instead of giving it up for a
Yeah,
while, you
right.
know?
And you give in to
But.
that whole the grass is greener thing because it's what the true secret to learning a language, and this is what I've found after countless interviews, is keep learning the language and one
Yeah.
day you will speak it. But
Yes.
if you keep switching between two languages, the time that you invest into each one individually is not very much. So while you can learn two languages at once, I just don't see a reason to do it. And doing it myself at the same time. So that's kind of contradictory, but
Well, you're Russian. You've been doing Russian for so much longer.
Yeah.
And you're currently located in...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, though, because my Russian is terrible, and I didn't put many hours into it.
Like, I think it just... It kind of comes naturally when you've been studying things for just different times in your life that you just have different things, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, I think I'm still planning this summer to start Mandarin, but I don't really plan to like try and work on it real fast or anything. And I'm planning to try and just keep it to speaking for a while.
I guess if you're at different levels, I think it's okay because then you can use the second language as a break sometimes.
Because you don't want to forget. That's the thing, too. Because, you know, like if you don't use something, you will forget it eventually. There's people that really have no opportunity to speak their native language will have a lot of difficulty calling it back up.
Oh, yeah.
Even their native language. So I think kind of transitioning the study of like your advanced language into more of that maintenance style, too. You know, like during the summer, I'm not planning on sitting down and studying any of my Spanish grammar books like I was doing before I went back to school, or even like some of my classes make me do, but I'm still planning to like keep reading things in Spanish and listening to things in Spanish and like try and keep up on my Anki decks and
that's another good point.
Pronouns, things like that, just so I don't forget it in the fall. And then, you know, and people, so then I guess when you're sort of at an intermediate level in a language, but you want to focus on something else, then that's kind of a challenge because do you want to keep like studying new materials really actively, or because like I plan to keep studying Korean really actively over the summer because I just like it and because I'm planning to go to Korea after I graduate. But at the same time, like, well, part of it is just going to be the maintenance stuff too. Just like I have this couple podcasts that I like, some of which are focused for language learners and some that are just stuff. And I don't know.
I think at one point when you get the basics of a language, you're essentially just building out your vocabulary and building out your comprehension. So once you're over that hump, which takes a long time to be fair, but once you're over it and you can just listen or read material without too much trouble, then you're essentially just building on your skills. Whereas if you're new in a language, you also have to understand how the grammar works. You also have to understand how, you know, each part of the language works together. And once you know that, also sometimes the alphabet, I mean, that's a good start, right? and how they actually pronounce things. So I would say...
Like starting with just talking, though, I think. Like, I really still like Pimsleur for starting, even though it's a little slow and always it teaches you language a little too formal. Right. I like it for starting because it just makes you just use your ears and your mouth.
Yeah, and they do really focus a lot on pronunciation. Like, they really drag out the endings, which can be a little boring sometimes, but they definitely focus on trying to get you to say it somewhat correctly.
So like that's my plan, is that after my semester's over, I'm going to just get Pimsleur Mandarin from the library and put it on my phone.
Awesome.
And I know it's a really expensive program, but you know,
well, it's expensive.
The library has it. And, it's at the library at the public library here. So I don't feel bad about putting a library CD on my phone in the same way I might feel bad about pirating an expensive thing.
Well, come on. We're all leftists now, aren't we? So
it's the corporations.
Yeah, these evil corporations. obviously, as a disclaimer, the podcast is not condoning any illegal activity, but...
I'm planning to go and buy... I already actually did buy the Fluent Forever Mandarin, like... sound flashcards, and I think I'm gonna maybe buy some other like independent products that are a little bit on the cheaper price range that are really pronunciation speech focused. And
I can recommend the Pod 101 Class 101 series. They're very affordable.
Paying for a subscription for that for a little while for the Mandarin as well.
So if people are interested in that, you can go to actualfluency.com/pod101 and all the languages are there, so you can find your language. And there's a discount, I think, there, maybe. I don't know. There should be.
They're always running discounts, though.
Yeah, they like, are.
Feed right now for Korean. But when I started out, I paid for a couple months, and I went through a lot of the beginner lessons, and it was really It's really
pretty useful, I
helpful. I
think.
like how they have things a little bit separated too, even though I think it's good to like build on the previous things. Like when a program is or materials are just too linear, then it becomes very like that's not really how language is.
Yeah.
You know, it's everything all at once once you're in real materials. So
I like they explain the cultural notes and also the
yeah.
grammar. And but it's not too much, like it's not a grammar program at all, but they do explain sometimes, oh, here it ends with a T because it's an object, and sort of it's easy to digest, and the episode's only about 10, 12 minutes, and you can put it on your phone to download. And
And I really like, especially for more like music like exotic or difficult languages with programs, I like going through a lot of different beginner materials from different places.
yeah.
You know, like I have my for Korean, I have my school textbooks, I have a different college textbooks I bought, I have different websites that have kind of a linear progression as well. And when I was doing the Pod 101 from them, I went and there's a couple different for absolute beginner programs. And there's like the questions one, which is really good
Yeah.
because it really gives you the skills to just, you know, find one noun in the dictionary and then you've got your own answer to a
Right.
question. So, weren't we wrapping up like 20 minutes ago?
Yeah,
Oh
I
my
was trying to, but then, well, there you go. We got into an interesting tangent and we just couldn't stop. But yeah, we definitely should. But I just wanted to thank you again for coming on because I've had a great time, and I'm sure people would love to hear about your story and
Yeah.
ideas about language learning. So thank you so much.
You put links to the stuff is on the website, right? You do like that usually.
Links to the stuff.
Links to the stuff.
You mean the stuff we've been talking about?
Oh, no.
Oh.
To my
Oh
yeah.
yeah. I'll link to your
I literally have a blog about language learning, but it hasn't been updated in over a year. But I'm still paying to keep the URL. So I better write something else.
Yeah, and the URL is a little bit complicated, at least for me. Maybe it's
Yeah,
a
URL is in Spanish, so
right.
just put it on
Okay,
the
yeah. So if people are listening, you can find all the links and everything we talked about in the show notes on
website. All right.
the podcast.
Awesome.
So thank you so much, and do
Thank
keep
you.
in touch on Twitter. And if you make it to an event around the world, be sure to come over and say hi.
Love to, but we'll see. All right.
They're
Bye.
pricey. They're
Yeah.
pricey.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So.
Like, oh,
Definitely.
the North America one. Where is it? Oh, Montreal. Okay.
Montreal. Well, next year maybe they'll be in America. I think their original plan was to cycle between Canada and the US. So hopefully the
Yeah, but next
2000.
year I'm going to be in Asia.
Oh, well, then you're just difficult. But
I'm just screwed.
yeah, well,
And
there hasn't been a Polyglot event in Asia yet. So who knows? It might happen.
who
Thank
knows?
you so much
All
for listening
right.
to
But
the
anyway,
Actual
thank you so
Fluency
much, and yeah,
podcast.
I'll
If
talk
you
to you
want
again
to come
soon.
onto the podcast and share
Bye.
your language learning story, don't hesitate to apply on actualfluency.com/guest. See you in the next one.